So I felt crazy a few times in my life, but as it turns out, very few things make you feel crazier than recording a podcast alone in your house with no guests. But we're going to see how this works. Hi, I'm Ace Sandbender. You're probably familiar with me if you're listening to this. This is a podcast that does not have a name yet, does not have any sponsors yet, not even really sure what the concept is. Right now you're really listening to more of an elaborate podcast equipment test, but I figured while I was doing that, might as well see if I could produce something, because I am deathly bored after months of not really working. That's the genesis of this podcast, is that I have a USB input that I can plug a microphone into now, and a lot of time on my hands, with not a lot to fill it other than sleep. So, welcome to this podcast. It does not have a name, it does not have a sponsor, and again, it does not have a concept, but I'm kicking around some ideas for the future. Even have a potential guest lined up for a later episode that I think you guys will enjoy. Hopefully I figure out how to do multiple microphones by then. It's part of why I'm doing this. So anyway, to kick off this very fuzzy project, I solicited some questions on Twitter. So this will be a bit of an audio mailbag to start off a podcast that will hopefully only go uphill from here. So starting off with something that is right in my wheelhouse. First of all, we are coming off directly off of Michigan's win over Indiana. We just learned that Xavier Simpson's favorite band is the Backstreet Boys. That was even more shocking than seeing Michigan wipe the floor with an Indiana team that has clearly quit on Archie Miller. Not good times to be an Indiana basketball fan. We were talking on the MGO pod about how their experience is a lot like Michigan football's right now in terms of fandom, and that felt like a Hoke era special right there. So sorry if any Indiana fans are listening. You're in a bad place right now. And anyway, this one is right up my alley, from Sergeant Wolverine on Twitter. If the Michigan basketball team were a ska band in the mid-aughts, what instrument would each player play? For those of you who don't know, I was both the lead singer and saxophone player in a ska band in high school. I can't remember how many other details of that have made their way onto MGO blog, other than the song that Seth posted, but I'll let you all hunt that down if you feel like it, and move on to the question, which is right up my alley. So first of all, backbone of any band, but you know, also ska band, is the rhythm section. Michigan, I would say, has a three-man backbone. Starting off, this was the one that first came to mind as soon as the question was asked, in part because there was the photo of Charles Matthews after his game-winning shot against Minnesota, where he's just got, he looks like his dog just died, as he's being asked about this game-winning shot. You know, just a very chill, level dude, and I always associate that with the bass player, and with Matthews also. It works on a couple levels in terms of, first of all, he's got that bassist personality, not necessarily the guy that wants to be at the forefront, a little bit more in the background, not the guy whose name is going to be put on the top of the marquee, but still a very important part of the group, and a guy whose contributions you may not necessarily notice, and then all of a sudden you're like, damn, this thing slaps. And, you know, with music, that's, you know, a kick-ass bass line will do that when you maybe haven't noticed that the guy's been playing all night. And with Matthews, that's, you know, like him turning Romeo Langford into dust. for 40 minutes. Although he does get credit for that these days, but usually that's something that's kind of off in the background. And Matthews did get snubbed for Naismith Defensive Player of the Year watch list, even. So yeah, we'll say he's being underrated, and we'll give him the bassist role. I'm putting John Teske on the drums. He's the dude who keeps everything in rhythm. When you see kind of on and off the court, you know, when Teske's on the court, the offense is flowing. Things are working well. Obviously, the defense is extremely strong. But really, this is more about how the offense kind of functions as it's supposed to. And right now, Michigan doesn't really have a backup five who keeps things moving like Teske does. The offense tends to be a little bit more stilted. So I think of Teske as the guy who's kind of keeping the rhythm of this team. That leaves a guitar for Xavier Simpson. He's out in front a little bit more, both as the guy who's running the offense and the dude who's up top guarding the opposing team's point guard. A little bit more out in front. Sets the tone a little bit. You know, Simpson, you know, may not be the guy who puts up the biggest numbers on this team, but he's kind of the face of this team, the guy that most people associate with it. And for, you know, a lot of bands, that's a guitarist. The other guy and instrument that kind of fall into that is lead singer. But with ska, little dirty secret, bit of a cell phone. You don't really need to be that good at singing to be a lead singer in a ska band. I was terrible. There are the other parts of the band kind of hold things together, really lay the basis for how good the band is going to be. A good lead singer can kind of really put you over the top. So for me, I put Iggy Brazdeikis in that category, where Michigan, you know, as we've seen the last few games, you know, they don't necessarily need him to always be on top of his game. But when he is, it really makes this team almost unstoppable. So Iggy Brazdeikis, but also talk about a dude who likes kind of putting himself out there. I don't think Iggy would shy away from that spotlight, shall we say. And speaking of which, and I think some of you are probably surprised that I didn't put Jordan Poole in more of a starring role, but he's been a little bit more of a role player so far this year, and the loudest role player in the ska band is the trumpet player. So I have to give that to Jordan Poole. I think it fits his personality. He's a smaller guy. The trumpet's a smaller instrument. Something where, you know, when you play it with a certain level of touch and feel, it can be absolutely beautiful. And when you hit a wrong note, and could you really notice? Poole's game is loud and every direction, mostly for the good, but, you know, sometimes when he's dribbling into traffic, you get some loud turnovers these days, or some shots that cause him to have very entertaining sideline interactions with John Beilein, if you read Brendan Quinn's excellent article on The Athletic recently. To wrap up the ones that I have a solid handle on before semi-ad-libbing this segment, I have Isaiah Livers as the saxophone player. That's close to my heart because I was a saxophonist growing up. So we'll also specify tenor because I have strong saxophone opinions. Saxophone, a versatile instrument. You know, you can have it kind of come out and be the lead in that horn section a little bit, or you can have it sit back and play something a little bit lower on the scale, provide some harmonies, be a little bit more supportive. Livers fits whatever role Michigan really wants him to play, including of late. He's been a little bit more aggressive on offense. Yeah, so that kind of fits with the saxophone bit, where, you know, stick Livers at center if you need him, stick him at the four, bring him off the bench, you know, whatever you need him to do, he's going to do it. Maybe I'm praising saxophones a bit too much, but I am biased. And the one that I can't figure out is trombone, because Michigan at this point really runs six deep. I guess at the moment, trombone by default goes to Eli Brooks, although we can also say that, you know, not every ska band needs a trombonist. I would like to see Michigan maybe upgrade their trombonist, and we'll see. You know, maybe Brandon Johns fills that role. But it is, you know, kind of a low-usage instrument, so maybe that works no matter what. And, you know, it's kind of a second bassist, so Eli Brooks is kind of your second bassist for now, although it would have worked better if I'd made Simpson a bassist. But you know what? First podcast, bit of an ad lib segment. Just to recap, we've got John Teske on the drums, Xavier Simpson on the guitar, Charles Matthews on the bass, Jordan Poole on trumpet, Isaiah Livers on saxophone, Eli Brooks on trombone by default, and Ignaz Prazdakis as your lead singer. Next question is a little more serious. It comes from at AffluenzaQB on Twitter. Michigan could solve a fair amount of offensive woes by only having Poole and Iggy handle the ball late in the shot clock. Only reliable ball handlers / shot creators. Thoughts? To be honest, I largely agree. We've seen Michigan's offense get bogged down a lot late in the shot clock. We've seen a lot of Charles Matthews mid-rangers. According to Hoop Math, he leads Michigan in field goal attempts in the last 10 seconds of the the last 5 seconds of the shot clock, and Xavier Simpson is second. Those aren't necessarily the guys you want in those situations. It tends to be a lot of late, in Simpson's case, a lot of late ball screen action, and I don't necessarily love that for Michigan late in the clock, because as effective as Simpson and Teske have been in the pick and roll, those guys, especially Simpson, obviously needs a lot of spacing around him because of his lack of an outside jump shot. And when you're getting down to the end of the clock, opposing defenses can help a little bit more on Simpson in those cases, play a little bit more aggressively against that pick and roll, because if he does dish off to a shooter at the end of a shot clock, first of all, he might not have time to do that. And if he does, you get to close out as hard as you possibly can on that shooter, because you don't have to worry about them putting the ball on the deck. There'll be a shot clock violation. So When I see Michigan kind of reset and go into a late ball screen with Simpson, it's not my favorite look late in the clock. And in general, now Iggy is only one shot behind Simpson in terms of attempts with 5 or fewer seconds left on the clock. Jordan Poole isn't too far behind that. Iggy's been by far the most effective according to Hoop Math late in the clock. Makes sense. He plays well through contact. He's a bigger dude. He's at 75% field goal percentage at the rim in those situations. He's a good player to have, and he's also got enough of a pull-up three-point shot where he can be a bit of a two-way threat, especially out of the if he's got the ball in a triple threat position on the perimeter with a few seconds left in the shot clock, he can threaten either way. So can Poole. I would like to see Michigan kind of just clear the ball out for both those guys, clear the floor out for both those guys more often, especially in late clock situations, but depending on the matchup, sometimes in earlier clock situations too. You see Michigan get some screen mismatches that they don't necessarily attack the way that you'd like. I know my esteemed former boss, Brian, probably does not like me calling him his my former boss, but that is technically the case right now. Is not always a huge fan of those jab step threes. I think, especially with Poole and actually even with Charles Matthews, that's one of the threes I actually like him taking. If you clear out space with that, I think that's a good shot, especially since that really sets up so many of your off-the-dribble moves, especially in Jordan Poole's case. He's got a whole array of things that in large part play off of that threat where he jabs and goes right up. So I don't mind that shot. I wouldn't mind seeing it late in the clock. He's not shooting great late clocks so far this year, but it's a tiny sample. I could see that getting a lot better. Iggy's been doing well late clock no matter what. I'd like to see more of those two guys and a little bit less of the Simpson-Teske pick and roll game out of there. It's just too easy for opposing teams to overplay that pick and roll when you get late in the clock. And then Matthews, unless he's getting all the way to the basket on more of these shots, he's just not getting to the rim enough right now. Only 5 of his 36 attempts at the end of the clock have come at the rim. Instead, you're getting a lot of two-point jumpers and more three-point jumpers than you necessarily like out of Matthews when they're being forced up late. You want him taking stuff more in rhythm or maybe off of that jab step. So that is something that kind of leads into the next question I got on here, which is for 2 years in a row, Michigan has had an uninspiring offense when they get hot, except when they get hot. Any idea how they might improve before the tournament? That is from at the one man zone. So I think that's one thing, is just a redistribution of their late clock offense. And then I think the biggest thing really for room in improvement in the offense is the emergence of somebody as a viable backup center option. I haven't given up on Austin Davis entirely, although it seems like John Beilein might. He has not played in the last couple games. It has been Brandon Johns at that backup center position, and he definitely gives Michigan more upside there. We did see a little bit, though, with Davis when Wisconsin just ignored him in the pick and roll, that he could at least finish those open ones. He went 2 for 2 in that game, had a couple dunks, but he's been so foul prone and not keeping the offense in motion enough and not holding up well enough on defense to really stake a claim to playing time, especially when you get against the tougher opponents in the tournament. And that leaves kind of pinning the hopes on Brandon Johns to get an idea of what he's doing out there, because the offense when he's out there right now is still stilted. You can tell that he's still getting his bearings, which, I mean, for a lot of guys, it takes longer than a year. So we'll see. I mean, the hope is that he can, by the end of the season, get it down. He did have a great outing in the first Indiana game when he went 4 for 5 from the field. Had 8 rebounds, 3 on the offensive side, blocked a shot. But there's still questions about whether he can hold up against more traditional centers on defense. He had a little bit of trouble with Juwan Morgan tonight when they got matched up there a couple times. But the biggest question is, can he get used to the offense? Because right now the offense just really bogs down when Teske is off the floor. He's what keeps things going, what keeps the offense in rhythm, because if Poole and Iggy aren't consistently creating offense on their own, and it's been a bit up and down for both of those guys, Michigan really needs both those guys clicking to not be pretty reliant on the pick and roll game. And right now the pick and roll game's really only working with John Teske out there. So the upside for the rest of the season is that you got to develop another option in there, and Johns could be really interesting because he's got some upside as a pick and pop option. He's a natural 4 with a decent looking jump shot. He could certainly have some upside there, and he's also a guy who can crash the offensive glass. It's something he's done well this year so far. We just don't have enough info on him. He hasn't been assertive enough, and he does look like he's still getting an idea of what he's doing out there. But Michigan has had guys come on late in the season before and become key players come tournament time. I think that's what you're looking for here, because, I mean, unless we see something out of Eli Brooks that we really haven't so far, you're probably getting what you're getting out of the team, or barring, you know, Jordan Poole living up to my preseason expectations. But I'm trying to tamp those down so as not to jinx them any more than I may already have. I think the big key for a potential breakout
and Michigan's offense. And also, Michigan's offense is not bad. We also got to get that out of the way. They're 31st on KenPom right now, which if you put that next to the number three defense in the country, is pretty good enough that can get you into the championship game. Michigan was 35th last year with the number three defense. So, and actually, KenPom has just updated and is now the number two defense and 30 offense. But regardless, they do the main thing that they need to do, which is they do not turn the ball over. And when you've got a half-court defense as good as this one, that's going to keep you in every game. But it would be nice for a second center option to emerge and make it so that if Teske does pick up that second foul in the first half like he did tonight against Indiana, that you're not looking at an extended stretch where the offense is going to be ugly and probably coming mostly from individual play. Not your enemy. I'm a friend that you need. We are moving back into Michigan basketball fantasy land with the next question from @FarmDupree on Twitter. If you could build a basketball team out of multiple clones of the same Michigan alumnus, who would it be? And I thought the first two responses to this were rather interesting. The first being Caris LeVert, and I may be the biggest Caris LeVert fan outside of his immediate family. So he definitely was somebody I strongly considered here, although he was just a little too skinny at Michigan for you to want to field an entire team of that guy, I think, despite the length and the ability to do pretty much everything other than rim protect. Which is also why the other suggestion, Mo Wagner's, is one that I considered and is probably, I mean, you could probably do okay with a 2-3 Mo zone, but spacing might be kind of a problem, even with his three-point ability, because the off-dribble stuff worked a lot better against big men than it would against your average perimeter defender. And Nick Ward isn't Xavier Simpson. I don't know if I'd put an entire team of Mo's out there. And actually, that immediately took my mind. I think with Beeline guys, there's just too many guys who are either too small, like Trey Burke. And if throw five of them out there, I love Trey Burke, but you're going to get run over by somebody. And the rest of the guys were too one-dimensional. And which is my nice way of saying most guys on Michigan did not play a whole lot of defense for most of Beeline's tenure here. And then, you know, Michigan's got a pretty rich basketball history. So you start going back ways. The Mo Wagner suggestion made me think of another big guy who could plausibly get thrown out there, maybe in a have him play zone and then just see if he can rain down on the other team. Chris Webber, you know, people might not love him for reasons. You know, in terms of having somebody who can protect the rim, move around, Webber was a superlative passer, great rebounder, obviously, great scorer, obviously. May not have ideal three-point touch for the modern game, but if you get his level of big-to-big passing, it might not matter too much, and then it'd be hellacious to go against five Chris Webbers on defense. But ultimately, I think the correct answer is Glenn Rice. He's 6'7", 215 pounds in college. an unbelievable scorer, obviously, you know, sets the NCAA tournament record for points in a tourney, leading Michigan to the title. He rebounded well. He averaged 9.2 rebounds per game as a sophomore at Michigan. That number dropped as his role changed a little bit over the next 2 years, but he could hit the boards. He always had some, you know, okay assist numbers. He always at least cracked two per game. Wasn't a hugely impactful defensive player, but at least has the size. And then you assume that what he's giving up, he's mostly going to be giving up on defense on the inside. And on the other end, you've got his three-point shooting ability. The dude shot 52% from three as a senior. So I think that ultimately is my answer, is you throw five Glenn Rices out there. A little bit more modern. I know some people would like to throw it back to Kazzie Russell. I will go ahead and admit I have not pored over Kazzie Russell film before doing this. So Craig Ross and the rest of you old schoolers, yell at me if you want. I probably deserve it. But I'm sticking with Glenn Rice. The health question for last, and my inclination is to apologize for even including it, but I am trying to fight that inclination these days. So this is from Jeep and Ben. How are you currently measuring improvement in your health? What's your next big health goal? Hope you're feeling better. Thank you, Ben. So to kind of, I guess, lay the background here, obviously I have stopped working. Really haven't been working since August. And for the most part, I've really been housebound since then. I've mostly stayed here, focused on resting and trying to figure out my medication protocol, what I want to be on, what makes sense now that I don't have to worry about accommodating work. You know, seeing if there's stuff to change, hopefully starting to get off of benzodiazepine soon, which I had been on since I was 15, and would like to not be on anymore. They're not a critical part of my current protocol. It's just something that's very difficult to stop taking. But yeah, I've mostly been at home. I've been honestly quite limited in terms of what I've been able to do. I sleep a lot. I watch a lot of British murder mysteries on Netflix. I watch a whole lot of basketball. And that probably sounds a lot better than it really is in terms of, I mean, that kind of sounds like a vacation. So to answer the question, what I'm currently measuring in my health, mostly it's what I'm capable of doing on a given day, because the goal basically right now is just to be able to
get up, feed myself, keep my house, might keep my apartment at a baseline level of clean. And that's really it. You know, if I can take care of three meals for myself and, you know, do a little bit around the house, that's a productive day for me right now. Unless you count firing off tweets as production, which I do not. one way I'm measuring improvement is just by how much I can get done in a certain day, and that's been pretty stagnant lately, although feeling up to doing this is a good sign. I would say that if this was even a couple weeks ago, I would probably not feel like sitting in my office at 10 o'clock talking into a microphone. And even tonight, I kind of did this on a whim, and we'll see if I pay for it tomorrow. And that's another way I measure things in every ME patient measures how they're doing is what kind of price they pay for expending energy. It's known as post-exertional malaise. It kind of undersells it a little bit. Because I will say that the other way I measure my improvement is how much pain I'm in on a daily basis. And a lot of times it is full body pain. It is brutal joint pain. It's neck pain that makes it difficult to find a comfortable position to sit or lay down. And I'm not doing a ton of standing or walking around. So my next big health goal, honestly, is to get to a place where I can get out of the house. Right now, you know, I'm fortunate enough to have my mom and my brother both close by. They pick up my medications. My mom grabs my laundry. My brother, I'm sure many of you have seen on Twitter, my many photographs of his dog, Ivy, who kind of is getting to play service dog for me, you know, not in any official capacity, but, you know, it's certainly a mood lifter when my brother brings her by, so it's actually kind of my longer-term goal is to have my health stabilized to a point where I'd feel comfortable getting a dog. Because I think in a lot of ways it would be very good for me to have some structure, not to mention a companion when I'm around the house, which is pretty much always, and, you know, a big mood lifter. I certainly wouldn't be the only person with a chronic illness to have a pet. And I'm allergic to cats, so that's not much of an option. I've always been a dog person anyway. So I know it's weird to have that be a health goal, but just getting to a place where, you know, I just feel comfortable enough knowing that, you know, even if I kind of have to limit myself to dogs that don't need a ton of exercise and are okay kind of hanging around the house and mostly being a lap dog. It's not a place I'm at right now, and I'm hoping to get there soon. And really the shorter term goal is just to reach a point where I don't feel like I need to sleep multiple hours during the day on a daily basis, which has been the case for probably a couple months now. So they're modest goals. They're goals that I kind of couldn't imagine setting for myself not that long ago, because I was well in front of that. This is definitely the most limited I've been, but that isn't uncommon with people with ME to have a crash after an extended period of pushing things, or a health crisis, or both. And certainly having surgery was a pretty big deal for me, and something that took, still taking time to recover from. I'm still kind of testing my digestive limits. I will spare you details, especially since they've gotten better lately. I've been able to eat a wider array of food. But yeah, I just like to reach the point where I feel both comfortable leaving the house and energetic enough to do so, and then we'll see from there. You know, love to have the brain power to get back to doing a little bit more of this, and hopefully writing some. I would at some point like to write about my experience with ME as part of something larger than just a few posts on the site, but I've not had it in me yet, and I also want to, you know, while I've been afforded this time to really rest and heal, not cheat myself on that and take advantage of it. And I'm, once again, I'm incredibly grateful that I can do that because of y'all. So right now it's a lot of sitting around and staving off boredom and figuring out what time it is and what day it is, especially since sleeping a lot during the day can do some funky things to your schedule, and it's not like we got a lot of light out there anyway. We've definitely had some disorienting moments, but hopefully coming back to a level here soon, and then I can kind of start thinking about the next step. At this point, it is very much a day-to-day thing. Thank you for listening to this episode of A Podcast with No Name, Concept, or Sponsor. I am A. Sam Bender, ostensibly of Emgo Blog. I'll let Xavier Simpson's favorite band play here.